The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the side.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
What's going on? Welcome to Kennel and Bell on this Wednesday. Big show we got to get to. The college football rankings came out last night. We're going to get your reaction to those. NBA, we'll hit on that as well. Plus, one Colin Kaepernick holding a workout for all 32 teams. What does it mean for him and his future? A ton of stuff we have to get to. We don't do a lot of baseball on our show.
Correct.
Understandably so. Neither one of us are dialed into it super in a 162-game schedule. What?
I was in a high school practice yesterday.
Yeah?
Right?
And for basketball.
For basketball.
Yes.
Basketball, high school practice. And I wanted to make an analogy to what was going on. And I said, how many of you guys watch baseball?
Crickets.
And my analogy was going to be like, we're trying to hit home runs here with our passes instead of getting singles and doubles and getting men in scoring position with our passes. And not one kid watched baseball.
Not too surprising. And that is something baseball is dealing with, is how their popularity, their sport is declining, and it is not too popular among the younger generation, which is problematic for the future. Well, they also could have a potential scandal on their hands with what is transpiring with the Houston Astros. So during the playoffs this season, you had a scenario where they're all of a sudden ripping, the Tampa Bay Rays pitching staff early in games, and they're coming out there, and there was some rumblings on Twitter. Hey, the Astros are stealing the signals. And most people were like, oh, okay, well, they're just really good at picking up on subtleties of how the pitcher is holding the ball in his glove.
Right.
And at the time, I was a little bit skeptical. I was saying, are they really that good at it? And I relied on some major league voices, guys that are experts in that business, say, no, they really are really good at it. They take a lot of pride in it. So I'm like, okay, enough. All right, I'll let it go. Then it comes out where Mike Fiers, who was a pitcher on their staff for the Houston Astros, said that they actually used a center field camera to help steal signs during their 2017 championship season. Mike Fiers came out and said the reason that he wanted this to be known, that he kind of came out and ratted, I just want the game to be cleaned up a little bit because there are guys who are losing their jobs because they're going in there not knowing, young guys getting hit around the first couple of innings, starting a game, and then they get sent down. It's BS on that end. He gives the details of how it happened.
You give it back your World Series ring, Mike?
Right, exactly. I don't think he is. And he definitely broke the code. Like, you do not give out your trade secrets, especially
if they're cheating. Yes.
But what I do think is interesting is the Astros released a statement saying, hey, we're still investigating. Like, they're not denying it. They're saying we're going to do an investigation. But it is kind of a unique circumstance. And where I kind of wanted to take this conversation, and baseball, I think it helps a tremendous amount. Like, you're at the plate as a batter, and you know there's going to be a fastball coming, you can look for that. I mean, look, how many guys we said, oh, they couldn't hit the curveball or they couldn't hit off-speed pitches that derails their careers.
Right.
If you whittle it down and you know there's off-speed coming, all of a sudden it makes you that much greater a chance of success. So I do think it's a really, really unfair competitive advantage. And using technology, which if you're using, you know, cameras and these types of things, that is outside the scope of, if you ain't cheating, you're not trying.
Right.
Like, I get trying to steal their signs when everybody's trying to do it. Everybody in baseball has always tried to do it, whether you're looking at the first base coach, you know, giving all these things and you're trying to steal them. If you're a runner on second base trying to peek in. But if you're using cameras, that to me crosses any sort of code that baseball would have.
Yeah, that I think you would have to draw a line if you're using, like, technology to steal it because – you know, it happens in every sport. It's not just baseball. Like basketball, you know, if you're out there and we're in the first quarter and I get a bead on horns over ISO, like whatever.
Right.
I'm going to start yelling that to the bench. So whoever's job it is on the bench to like take down the plays and what's happening on the plays, that's in our bank now. We know what you're running. So the next time he hears that call on the bench, he's going to yell out to me as a defender, Roger, going over the top of both screens, going over the top of both screens, side pick and roll. Side, you know,
right.
That happens in every sport. And I would even go as far as to say in basketball, technology is employed. It's not solely employed for stealing the signs, though. That we'll go back to film and see if we can catch a call on film, right? You're going to use the technology to support what you think you heard in the game, but it's not like you got a camera just right there on the coach's mouth trying to catch every call coming out of his mouth, you know?
Right. Do you think it helped you that much more if you were, if somebody told you, hey, go on top of the screen or whatever it was? Do you think it helps that much?
I think it does help to know, but you know,
in basketball, isn't there more of a free-flowing, like it might be a called play, but here's it can deviate from that play.
Yeah, this is what happens in basketball. Like I can know where you're going and try to – but ultimately, once you get the ball in your hand at the NBA level, it's you and me.
Right.
You know, so like, you know, good O is going to be good D all the time. So I'm kind of at – I'm yours once you got the ball. But it helps. It gives you a competitive advantage in just knowing, you know, the quick hitting plays where you're just going to get some kind of – screen and you're going to come off for a jump shot. If I know that, it helps me a lot because I can beat you to that spot. But for guys like James Harden and LeBron and guys like that, like it doesn't matter what you do to them. Kyrie,
right.
Get the ball, you're done.
Right. I was in a game on Monday Night Football. It was my last start against the New England Patriots. And this is kind of one of those things. And the Patriots, you know, Spygate, Deflategate, they've always towed the line. This was not one of those circumstances. This is when you're just paying attention. It's really smart football. We were trying to run a little bubble screen to a receiver, and we wanted to have a zone coverage because if they ran man, it's much easier to defend. So we were, and then we'd check off if they weren't the right defense, we would check out of it. So we called it twice,
right?
And now my cadence as the quarterback was any color except for black, and you could make up any number. Like you'd say white 15, set hut, or red 30, set hut. So that was kind of my usual cadence.
Right.
Now on that one, and you also want to make sure your linemen pay attention. So I was saying black, which was our code name for it's an audible.
Right.
Black 18T, which is again, normal, not normal because you're adding a letter in there. Black 18T. So we had run this check twice already. Third time we got out there. And I'm seeing it. I'm like, oh, crap, we got to check out of this. And I was kind of nervous, like, man, are they going to realize this is coming? Teddy Bruschi was the linebacker on the Patriots. So I go, but I'm like going black 18T.
And he's already.
And he's over there saying, the toss is coming this way.
Yes.
The toss is
You're
coming.
What?
Like, he sprints over there. And that's like, that's the part of acceptable, like what we should have done as the Broncos. And I wasn't the entrenched starter, but what I would have said, and this is what a Peyton Manning would have done or a Drew Brees or a Tom Brady, somebody who's entrenched there, said, all right, let's call black 18T
and
let's run a bootleg or a naked or a play action pass off of that.
Right.
Instead, we ran black 18T and Teddy Bruschi like almost took the toss. Like he almost intercepted it because he was all over it that much. And those are like smart things that, hey, you're paying attention. That's on the opponent. What I do have a massive problem with if you're using technology, like that to me is what crosses the line. It's not just trying to find an edge. It's blatantly cheating.
Yeah,
and that's why I think Major League Baseball is going to have an issue.
For a sport that really can't afford that.
Right, exactly.
They've
already had the steroid scandal, everything else that's unfolded.
I'm trying to think what that might be like the equivalent of if we're having a shoot around, and we're in your arena, we're on the road, and we're having a shoot around in your building, and you're filming our shoot around. To make
Which
sure
is
that
what the Patriots did during
yes, like that would be the equivalent because it's hard for me to find an in-game equivalent with basketball.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But
right.
Like that would really make it difficult if you came out that night and you knew exactly where we were running, exactly the way we wanted to play you pick and roll wise, and exactly what we wanted to take away from Danny Cannell. Like
right.
That make it a little, you'd have a much greater chance of success.
Joey's had some experience being on the bench, being close to the action as advanced scout. So Joey, what were you trying? What were some of your tactics?
Well,
there's
no tactics. Like in the NBA, there's really no need for technology to figure out other teams' calls. Like everybody knows that everyone's going to find out calls and this and that. Like when I was an advanced scout, if you were the game out of the team you were scouting, like if you're playing them next, you would get a seat that was basically next to the bench, and you could see everything and hear everything the coach was calling during the game, so you knew what the calls were. So you didn't really need technology. But I will say, when I was in college, not in the NBA, but when I was in college, when we would go on the road during our shoot arounds, we would walk up into the stands, we would like peek in the boxes, we would look in the aisles and stuff like that to make sure no one was taping us. But that was a college thing, more of a rivalry. In the NBA, we didn't really worry about it as much because, again, if teams are sending scouts to so many games and advanced scouts are sitting so close to the court, you don't need it. Like everybody kind of has their book on what everybody's running.
I go ahead.
No, the one thing I would say to Joey's point is, in the regular season, NBA teams, like, look, you're playing 82 games. You're
right,
like, whatever.
Right.
Let's just get the shoot-around done. Exactly. I want to get back on the bus, go back to sleep. In the playoffs, though, people are really, really, really anal about making sure that not even a custodian worker crosses the threshold between, like, you know, concession area and seats into the arena, or you'll have four security guards, because those game plans become way more detailed. And obviously, all the money's on the line now.
Yeah, but there were definitely some times where coaches knew that where the scouts sat, and they would do this when they made their call, or they would do their signal like down here like this, but. You know, actually, when I was doing video, the league unintentionally had like a technology thing. I don't even know if they realized it. They used to have this site. I don't know if they still have it, where they would put up every angle that was shot at the game. So they would have like low angles from cameramen behind the basket. And it was sometimes really close to the bench of the team that I was trying to scout. So I would watch these low angles that didn't have time on them, and I would hear the calls because the mic was picking up the bench, and I would match it up to the video to get calls. Like, the league unintentionally was doing it for us.
Yeah, that's there's definitely stuff. Advantages that are out there. I always thought coaches were too paranoid with protecting. Like, when my rookie year on the Giants, Dan Reeves was the head coach, and we had a practice bubble that we would go into if it was snowing or if it was raining. And I can't remember if it was the Cowboys. It was definitely an NFC East opponent, division opponent. Can't remember if it was the Eagles or the Cowboys or the Redskins. I can't remember which one it was. But it was like 70 degrees out, sunny, and we were going in the practice bubble. I'm like, well, what the heck are we doing?
Right.
Like, it's nice out. Like, why don't we go outside? And they're like, oh, Dan's paranoid today. And there was a hotel that was across the highway from our practice facility. He was convinced, Dan Reeves was convinced, that one of these teams would go get a hotel room in the top floor and would film our practice. So we went inside. And I remember at the time thinking, man, and everybody kind of rolled their eyes like, he's crazy.
Right.
Now looking back on all these things that have transpired,
yes, sir.
Like, no wonder we did that. Yeah. It made sense to do that. The other thing that made me think of when you said during the playoffs in the NBA, you would have custodians. Before every Monday night game in Denver, we would do our final walkthrough Sunday at the stadium, at the home stadium.
Right.
And Mike Shanahan would be nobody in the stadium, empty stadium, except for the guys in the yellow security things, like, that work at the stadium.
Right.
They would be at every entrance, kind of making sure nobody was watching. But not only that, all be back to the field
because
he didn't even trust them.
Correct.
And he would hey, what are you looking at?
Yep.
Like, and to have to turn around. Yeah. They could not look at the field. I'm like,
no.
But again, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah. To this day, like, if the Patriots were slipping somebody, or any team was slipping something to get an edge, there's a lot of money at stake. That's the thing I kind of learned.
I'm just cynical, I guess. Like, I don't know. I am assuming in any sport where millions of dollars in championships are on the line.
Yes.
That given the opportunity to gain an advantage,
you're going to take it.
You're going to take it. Yep. Even if it's crossing the line of what's acceptable
right.
in terms of cheating or scouting or whatever. I'm assuming. So I'm already starting with that. So I'm going to protect.
Yep. Deal with the repercussions after.
Yeah.
So you get fined, whatever it is. We'll deal with that later. Let's go ahead and get the championship first, and then we'll deal with it later as you get there. All right. Let's hit on the college football, because the rankings came out last night. I didn't think there was any super surprise to the rankings. I thought the committee got it right with LSU jumping over Ohio State, even though Ohio State put up 79 points and blew out Maryland. There's no way you could say that LSU's win over Alabama wasn't more impressive. The one thing that kind of resonates with me with LSU, they have 4 wins over teams that are in the current top 25.
Yes.
I mean, nobody else has 3 wins over anybody else that's in the top 25. There are some teams that have wins over 2 teams in the top 25, but 4, that is a really, really impressive resume. So no surprise for me that LSU jumped over Ohio State. I do think there's a chance that Ohio State, you might see on the back end of a little bit of a flip-flop back and forth throughout the remainder month of the season.
Sure.
LSU's schedule is really easy. Ohio State still has Penn State and Michigan. So I think Ohio State could retain that spot. But then ultimately, I do think if LSU wins the SEC and beats Georgia from the East, I think they'll be that final team in that scenario there.
2 questions for
you.
Joey, can you pull that back up? Can we get that back up? Because I want to make sure if Ohio State should lose.
Mm-hmm.
Not to Minnesota, let's say, or Penn State. Let's say they lose to Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm. In their rivalry game, last game.
And they still go on to win the Big Ten championship, though.
I think they're a lock.
Okay.
I do. I think the winner of the Big Ten, whether it was Minnesota, assuming it can't be Wisconsin or Iowa because they have multiple losses, and I think Iowa's actually eliminated. But if Minnesota was to win the Big Ten, I think they're in. I think they control their own destiny.
Minnesota, well, they'd be undefeated at that point.
Exactly.
So that works. But what if Ohio State
should lose
one and then wins?
And then if they beat Minnesota, I think they would be in.
Okay.
I think they would be okay.
Other scenario. Mm-hmm. One of those teams, for some reason, gets knocked out. Let's say Georgia loses.
To Auburn this weekend. They could.
To Auburn.
Yeah.
And let's say Auburn doesn't skip Oregon or Utah.
Right.
You got Bama in four. Oregon or Utah, one of them beats the other, which is a top 10 win, and wins the Pac-12.
Yep.
They don't get in as a one-loss conference winning team?
No. Bama gets in instead of them? I think they do. I think Bama, I don't think they should be in. I think they could be in some trouble. That scenario you're giving, I think the one big difference is that Oregon or Utah would have a championship next to their name, which is one of the criteria. It's not a requirement, but is one thing the committee does look at and says, this is something we value. If Oregon or Utah are one-loss teams, and their schedules aren't fantastic, but Bama doesn't have anybody on theirs,
right?
I still think the committee would do the right thing and put the Pac-12 champion in as a one-loss Pac-12 champion. And you mentioned it. They're playing each other, so that's going to be another top 10 win they could add to their resume. The one thing Bama has, and this gets a little bit unique, if it's Oregon wins the Pac-12 and Alabama is sitting there as one loss, they would have a common opponent, which if Bama's still one loss, that means they beat Auburn. And I think then it could come into play, but only if Bama waxes Auburn by like 30. And then they could say, man, Alabama might be a lot better than Oregon.
Right.
I still think...
Well, Bama is better than Oregon.
I don't know. I don't know if they are. I don't know if they are.
Those cats got like 25 first round picks.
So what? It doesn't matter.
On offense.
It doesn't matter. Bama's
they got two whole units on offense and they're all first round picks.
That to me doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. Like, because it's a team sport, right?
Right.
And I think Oregon actually would have a really good chance against Alabama. I think it would be a fun game. I think it could be close. Now, if you had to play it out, I would think Alabama could win seven times.
Defensively, Bama's not the same as they normally are.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think Oregon could score some points on
that. Yeah, you might be right.
But I think you ultimately have to go back to resumes. What have they done on the field? Or else we'd be having Bama, Clemson, Ohio State play every year because they look the best. They have the most NFL talent. They have the best recruiting classes. They
right.
would just
that
be
can't
in.
Be the
so you have to penalize teams for losing and not winning their conference. You know, there's a lot of flaws that are
A lot of flaws because what I would say, like just watching the way this continues to fluctuate and the way teams are moving, it would, if I was a team like Oregon or someone like that, it would disincentivize me to play anyone.
Right.
I'd stay away from Auburn.
Exactly. And that's why I think the committee did have that, and they actually referenced this, why Minnesota was still ranked eighth. They said, hey, Minnesota's non-conference isn't really cutting it. You know, they struggled against it. They played South Dakota State, you know, a couple other, Fresno State, no Power 5 opponents. And really why they crushed Baylor. Baylor's undefeated, and they're ranked 13th last night, which there are two lost teams over them. Florida and Auburn with two losses are ranked higher than Baylor. I have a problem with that. I think Baylor should be higher. But they're clearly saying, you know what? You haven't played anybody.
They just talk about both sides of the mouth
they do,
all the time.
Which is what I've tried to give this warning to college football fans. If you think you figured out the committee, you are wrong. Right. You will never be able to figure it out. In the end, they can justify their four selections for the playoffs any metric they
however
want to
they want.
That season. Mm-hmm. Joey, you got a question?
What about – you were just talking about Baylor. I was wondering about the Big 12. I mean, like, what about Oklahoma? Wins the Big 12 with one loss, where are they?
I mean, I think they'll be fine if they do. I have a hard time believing that Oklahoma's going to do that. They probably have to beat Baylor twice, including once this weekend. We'll get a much better glimpse at them. But Oklahoma's a team who's out of conference is respectable. It's just the fact, like, they played Houston, who normally is a pretty good team. They're not that good this year. UCLA is a Power 5 opponent who they absolutely drubbed, which I think is a pretty good resume builder there. I think that's a really interesting scenario. I think the Big 12 is in trouble, but here's what I would say. You can't eliminate them at this point in the conversation.
Sure.
Even though they're all the way down there at 10, I think they could still get back up there on the back end of their schedule. They have some better opponents, including an undefeated Baylor squad this weekend, where they could make a pretty significant jump there.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th.
hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Welcome back to Cadell and Bell. So a random story unfolded yesterday, very random, but considering the timing of it, where you are in the NFL season, where things have been really quiet on the Colin Kaepernick front.
That tells you all you need to know.
Okay, so
that's it. That's the beginning and the end of the story.
Adam Schefter tweets out yesterday that there has been a workout scheduled for Colin Kaepernick, and it's going to be held this Saturday. Which to me was a head scratcher because I was somebody who was, I had a lot of these workouts, probably right. About 10 of them mm-hmm. when I was out of the league trying to get back in. There, I was going to say 100% of the time, I'll leave open a little sliver. I'll say 98% of the time, these workouts are held on Tuesdays.
Why?
It's the universal off day when scouts, GMs, coaches can scout because they're not game planning. They're not traveling to games. It's just the day that kind of things get done. Tuesday.
I'm going to let you keep going.
Okay.
What position is it most critical for your biggest decision makers to be at the workout? So what position?
Quarterback.
Okay.
Yes.
Right? A random lineman, like you need to pick one off the heap, you just grab him, right?
But even then, they're still going to work out on a Tuesday.
Okay.
Right? So that was kind of the first thing that just seemed a little bit random. So NFL clubs were informed that a private workout would be held for Colin Kaepernick on Saturday in Atlanta. The other thing I was asking Joey, I don't know where Colin Kaepernick lives. I'm assuming it's Atlanta. Like, but maybe they scheduled it and they said, hey, you get there and we'll set it up for you. The session will include an on-field work and an interview. All clubs are invited to attend. Any video of both the workout and interview will be made available to all clubs. The NFL arranged this workout opportunity for Kaepernick, and teams will have the opportunity to evaluate his readiness and level of interest in resuming his NFL career. His agents have always said he wants to return to the NFL, and the league hopes this provides that chance.
Yeah.
All right, your reaction.
Yeah. Okay, it should have read, all teams are welcome to attend, even though we know you can't, and that's why we're doing it on a Saturday. Blah, 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 blah. The NFL hopes... All right. To put to bed any rumors that we don't want Colin Kaepernick back in the NFL. Therefore, we are providing this opportunity because that's all this is.
Here's the one thing I would push back on you. Why do this at all? If you're the NFL, like it's kind of been quiet. It's kind of gone away. A lot of the scrutiny, a lot of criticism.
Yeah.
Attendance is back up. Ratings are up. Like don't the NFL seems to be in a good spot. So why do this at all? And then if you did it wrong because I'm with you. It doesn't make any sense to hold this workout on a Saturday.
Correct. First of all, you
in
let
the middle of the season.
You let in the middle of the season on a Saturday, and Colin Kaepernick and company didn't find out until the Tuesday before it.
Right.
Like the participant in the damn workout didn't even know a week in advance. Right.
Right.
So that's number one. Number two, once they found out, they did request to for them to change from a Saturday to a normal Tuesday,
which makes sense.
They were told no. And the reason they said no was because no other facility was going to be available to them. Guess what? Does not have to be at an NFL facility.
Right.
A workout. It can be at any number. It could be at a damn high school field for absolutely all anyone really cared. It just has to provide the football field, the balls, and so on and so forth. So, like, I don't have the answer as to why, Danny, but I know all of the signs that are coming out of that story point to them not really, really, really wanting to give Kaepernick the best chance to show off for all these scouts.
I will give Colin Kaepernick credit here because he tweeted out, I'm just getting word from my reps that the NFL league office reached out to them about a workout in Atlanta on Saturday. I've been in shape and ready for this for 3 years. Can't wait to see the head coaches and GMs on Saturday. I don't know if he was being serious or sarcastic on that last one.
I think he's being serious.
But if he thinks they're going to be coaches there, he's wrong. Like, and that's where I feel bad for him, because they're not going to be there. They can't.
Well, no.
Every coach is going to have to be on site.
So that part's tongue-in-cheek. The first part, though.
I do, too.
I believe them to be genuine.
And I think there are some people that speculate, does Colin Kaepernick really want to play? If he shows up Saturday and works out, he does want to play. So good for him for showcasing it, saying, I don't care. Put me in a bad spot.
He's
put me wherever.
He's
always
maintained that he wanted to play, though. Like, he's never said to anyone that.
But I'm talking about some of his harshest critics that said, well, does he really want to play? If he goes out there and works out, I think he makes zero, you know, there should be zero question marks remaining about whether he wants to play or not. Do you, you've always been one that has said he is not playing again in the NFL. Do you still, you still going with that? Because I think there's a chance. I think this might open up the door for him.
I can't say 100% anymore.
Right.
Because I can't.
I hope. I really hope he gets an opportunity.
Oh,
I hope he gets on a squad.
I hope.
Like, I think it's better
wrong.
For our country.
Yeah, like, I think what's happened to him is an absolute travesty. Like,
right.
You know, I'm not even talking about the politics of it. I don't even want to get into that. But the fact that a guy with his skill set has been passed over by as many clubs, has been passed over for some people that I've seen out there playing quarterback. I think that's terrible for a guy's career. So I hope he plays again, Danny. But I'm telling you, man, you typically don't sit out that long with the circumstances that surrounded him and get back in. So
right.
I'm just being a realist with that. I hope he gets back in the league. But I can't tell you that I'm confident that this is going to amount to much.
I just
can't tell you that.
I wonder if a team, and obviously we'd have to have a team that's going to be able to have, you know, thick skin, whatever it is, they're not going to be able to take some heat, because whatever you think, you and I think, you know, there are going to be some people that are going to protest.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it's just kind of where we are in our country, right? The way the league is now, the way offenses are being run, what Lamar Jackson is doing, and I'm not saying Colin Kaepernick is the same runner, but he's pretty athletic.
Yes, he is.
And you're seeing guys like Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Russell Wilson, what he's doing at an elite level. Again, I'm not saying Kaepernick is one of those guys, but if you have an offensive coordinator who's a little bit innovative and says, you know what, I can make it work.
I can work that. What? Yep.
Maybe he does get a chance. I would love to see it. I do think it's a step in the right direction. Like, the more it comes, and maybe this will kind of go and it'll happen and there won't be a lot of screen, like, because maybe people have just kind of let it bygones be bygones. But you know what's going to happen is he's going to get interviewed, and they said it's going to be on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever scouts, coach, GMs are there, you know what they're going to ask? Are you going to kneel?
Yeah.
During the anthem. And then.
But
has he
already said that he's past the kneeling?
I think so too. And
he's already said that.
Do you think, and Joey and I were kind of arguing about this before, do you think he takes heat from his biggest supporters? And I hope he doesn't, because I think he's already made his stance. He's already put a tremendous amount on the line. But we've seen Jay-Z get criticized for partners, you know, being a sellout. Do you think Colin Kaepernick would be pegged as a sellout if he gets back? I hope he wouldn't, because I wouldn't think that would be the case.
Yeah,
he wants to make a living.
I'm sure some people would.
But that would be wrong, correct?
It would be wrong, because I hope that they can see that he's already sacrificed a ton for the cause that he chose to stand up for, right?
Right.
He's already, you know, given up multiple years of prime earning potential for himself. And he goes out in the community. He puts his money where his mouth is in philanthropic efforts to further, you know, the movement that he's involved with. So just because he decides to come back and kneeling isn't a part of his advancing the conversation anymore, I don't know that he should be criticized for that.
You know what would be really cool is if he came back, didn't kneel, but actually got to play, and actually, because we haven't really heard Colin Kaepernick speak that much on the issues that he's passionate about, that he was given a platform, and all of a sudden he would have a voice again because he'd be on TV every single week.
Right.
He would be interviewed all the time, and he would be an NFL player, which would help him promote the message that he wants to get out there, that he's, you know, we need to change our society. Police brutality, we need to make it stop. How can we do some of these things? I think that could be potentially a happy ending to a story that's been just one of the biggest, you know.
You know what? If I'm being honest with you, though, he can't say any of that. And when they're interviewing him, if he wants to play football, he better not say none of that.
See, I think he can. I just think he can't kneel. I think he can make the case, because I don't think anybody argues against police.
If they ask that man, hey, Colin, all right, look, you're not going to kneel. We've gotten past that. Are you going to be a staunch advocate for police brutality going forward?
I think
this is something that
yes.
Our club, no, he cannot. Not in
I think
the
he
NFL.
Can. Nope. I think he can. I think that we will agree to disagree.
Okay.
I hope he gets that choice to get in front of a microphone and get asked that question.
I, you know? Listen, again, I want to make it clear. I want him to play in the NFL and still be able to bring awareness to some of the things that, that plague this country, whatever's near and dear to his heart. I don't even give a damn what it is. I think everyone deserves the right to do that.
Of course.
I just don't think that those guys, the way they've treated him and the message that he stood for and the heat that they got because of it, are willing to hear him say, hey, listen, if you let me back in, I'm going to still champion for that cause and have them let him back in. I don't believe they will.
All right. We'll keep you updated on it, of course, right here at CBS Sports HQ and on Kinnell and Bell of what exactly transpires Saturday. What does it mean for Colin Kaepernick's future? And if he does sign with the team, we'll be here to break it down. All right. Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. There was a controversy on Monday Night Football because you had the San Francisco 49ers, Seattle Seahawks go to overtime. And when you saw Geno Smith, who was put out there, I guess it's the Seahawks thing. I'd never heard of this before. They send their backup quarterback out to call the coin toss.
Yeah.
So Geno Smith goes out there, and what does he call? It's a big controversy now. And it's sort of like the Laurel and Yanni deal when you heard those two things and different people hear different things. I think he called tails, but the head referee says, okay, heads is the call. Right after I think he said tails.
I heard heads.
You heard heads?
I heard heads.
I'm telling you, it is not as clear cut as you're making it out to be. But in any case, it goes heads. It comes down heads. They win the toss. They get the ball. So people are saying, all right, well, maybe that. Because my initial reaction was like, if you said tails and the official says, all right, heads is the call.
You'd be like, no, no, no.
Yeah, yeah. Why wouldn't you correct him? It was kind of quick, though.
Okay.
But then it was it a very heads up thing by Geno Smith to not say anything? Because once you get heads, you're like, why would I?
Absolutely.
Now
you play that off like absolutely. Except there was someone from the other team out there. So if he heard you, he would have been like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Right. And then it kind of brought up the conversation. And this is where I want to go because I was a math whiz in college and statistics and everything else. When he was asked why. Did you call heads? He said Russell Wilson called tails to start the game.
Yep.
And the mathematical odds always favor for you to go in the other direction. Now, I am a believer in this type of thinking, and I've referenced it a couple times. When you go to Vegas, you go to a casino, and they actually track the roulette table, and there's that long thing that has the list of numbers that have come up.
Right.
If I have seen 10 black 13s or 20, whatever numbers they are in a row, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to play the odds that the next time on the 11th roll, on the 11th, you know, roll spin of the roulette wheel, it's going to be red. And yet I have gotten to heated arguments before with people who say, nope, every single time you roll it out there, it is a 50-50 or flip a coin. It is a 50-50 proposition. It's different, obviously, in roulette because there's the greens, which throw those off a little bit. But when you flip a coin, is it 50-50 every time? Or if you had 10 tails in a row, would you think the probability would increase that the next one would be heads?
Yeah, I mean,
mind
you're getting into, I would think that it's 50-50 every time you flip that coin, but.
But with averages.
But if you've had 10 in a row, the probability that you would get a heads coming up has to increase, right? Like if you had 10 tails in a row.
Can
both of those be true?
I don't know.
50-50 every time, yet the probability increases once you get 12 deep into one or the other?
Right. And I think where you get into it is if you flipped it a million times, it would be 500,000, 500,000. But you could get a stretch where it could be 100 in a row. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, but the odds would be against that in that window.
In that, yes.
When they come back.
Saying.
Joey, what was your math?
It's too bright a conversation for either you or I.
I've got to tell you guys, I did a lot of research on this, and this topic is almost as polarizing as whether he called heads or tails on the internet. Like, people are going at each other on the math. Also, in high school, I once told a math teacher that I would be quiet and not annoy him anymore if he just gave me a C instead of failing me. So that's my math. And I believe that every coin toss is independent of the other one, so it's 50-50 every time. But there was one math site that said if you flip a coin back to twice, so you're flipping it twice, there are four outcomes. You could have heads, heads, tails, tails, heads, tails, or tails, heads.
Right.
In three of those combinations, you could have heads, which means that if you flip a coin twice, there's a 75% chance you're going to get heads, meaning the first one was tails, so I guess that means statistically there's a better chance he was going to get heads.
So you're saying Russell Wilson was right?
Well,
in his thinking.
I don't know. If, well, Gino.
Gino.
But he referenced Russell Wilson earlier.
I'm just saying that they're saying there's a 75% chance based on the combinations you could get if you flip the coin twice that you're gonna get at least heads or tails once.
I'm more confused now than I think I ever have been on this one.
You know what I like to talk about?
What?
Sports.
All right, let's get back to sports and stay away from statistics, as we're both, I think, more confused than when we started this conversation. The Houston Rockets, Daryl, their GM, yeah. Daryl Morey, sent, a seven-word tweet that sent the NBA world up in arms and the international community as well, with what it meant to China and their relationship with the NBA. There have been some numbers crunched that I don't think portray accurately the exact total.
Right.
But I think it does put it in perspective. League sources say the franchise has lost more than $7 million in revenue this season from canceled Chinese sponsorship agreements and nearly $20 million overall when you consider terminated of multi-year deals that were actually calculated as well. I think that number pales in comparison even to what the Rockets potentially have lost,
sure,
and to what the NBA has lost. I mean, I think you could add maybe a zero to that number.
Yeah, these numbers are way off. You're talking about...
And these are the ones definitively they can put it towards.
Yeah, totally. But you're talking about major, like... deals to show NBA games in China, deals that you know, irreparable damage has been caused to the parties involved in them. Like, you won't really know what this figure looks like for years to come. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right,
the ramifications of this will play out over the next few years. As I'm reading this and I'm looking at it, like, the best thing that I think comes out of this is the conversation with the NBA and the NBPA about, you know, education for teams that are going to be playing abroad, and for talking points, and or maybe not even talking points, but just to educate them on the relationships and what's going on in the countries that they have these mega deals with, so that people don't wind up, you know, saying something that they don't know about. And I'm not saying that Daryl Morey did. I'm just saying, going forward, like, Daryl Morey fully probably understands the situation in Hong Kong and he supports it, and that's his right to do that. And I'm okay with that. But there are a lot of guys that don't know what's going on with some of these countries. So you throw a microphone in their face when they're in a country, you know, and they don't understand what's really taking place where they're at, and they say something off, you know, and it costs the league millions and millions of dollars. So awareness is always a good thing.
Yes.
And they do a good job, the NBA does, on a lot of fronts with awareness and education. They need to start doing that on this front.
To your point, many executives in the NBA said they would like the NBA to develop guidelines for dealing with China and other politically sensitive topics, which we're always having to tiptoe around. So I think that would be a smart policy. Another thing that I'm looking at, a couple things from this article that I was looking at that kind of caught my eye. One, I think with James Harden, we assumed the damage to his wallet could come from the Adidas deal, you know, a couple $100 million and what it would mean in China. I wasn't aware, like, these guys have endorsements across the board. So it could also jeopardize James Harden's endorsement agreement with Shanghai's SPD bank credit card.
Sure.
Like, they got endorsement deals over there that wide spanning, like, not only just shoe deals. The other bit of irony in here is that Daryl Morey actually at one time hired a Chinese firm a few years ago to help him manage his social media accounts in the country, mm-hmm, including Weibo. And then that company dropped Morey as a client immediately following his tweet. And then soon after, security consultants advised Daryl Morey to install advanced protective software on all his devices and change his passwords. I'd be a little freaked out if I was Daryl Morey.
Yeah, Daryl Morey is now like Enes Kanter with Turkey.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be like anywhere near China if you're Daryl Morey.
No.
Yeah, Danny, they also mentioned in the article, you mentioned the Adidas thing, but they mentioned that this isn't just affecting guys on the Rockets. This could affect guys like Klay Thompson, who's with Li Ning, and guys,
oh, totally,
or like Langston Galloway, who we'll talk about later, who's with a Chinese basketball brand. Like, mm-hmm, these guys' shoe deals could be impacted by this.
No,
definitely.
The NBA and the money coming in from China to the NBA over the last decade has been, like, it's just been a windfall of cash in a lot of different areas. You're talking, obviously, the TV deals or whatever, you know, the broadcast deals, the streaming deals, the you know, you referenced James Harden's bank, the shoe money,
yeah,
you know, all, there's just been, so, you know, I guess, you know what, you might be lucky in, like, as I'm thinking about it, if you're the NBA and Houston and you can quote roughly $27 right. million. Dollars. Even if it were to be $100 million, dollars,
right.
you might actually be lucky in that.
Right. And it's kind of interesting that when this story comes out, it feels like it's all gone away because remember, I was always like, just they need the games to start to kind of get past this.
Sure.
I still don't think China's past it.
Oh, China's not.
You know, we might have moved on in our discussion, but I think China is definitely still holding out for this one, and it'll be interesting to see what exactly it means. Load management has been the topic of conversation across the country as far as it pertains to the NBA with mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard sitting out. LeBron James, he said his guy, AD,
yeah.
is out there going against everything of load management, saying my guy's out there playing through pain, through a shoulder injury. And this is why we aren't buying into load management. We're going to go out there and we're going to do a little bit of old school. His quote when he was asked about Anthony Davis said, for him, when he's showing that grit, when he's playing through injuries, there's no reason for any of us not to be out there as well. He's been showing everything. Your thoughts on LeBron. I've always believed that if you wanted the load management narrative to change, it has to come from the players. Is LeBron trying to change?
Nope.
The philosophy?
No.
No.
No, he's not.
He's just hyping up his teammate.
No, and he's what AD is a guy who's missed a lot of games.
Yes.
A lot of injuries.
Injuries have been a problem with him.
You are trying to earn the respect of not only your team, but maybe more importantly, LeBron James. If you have a nagging shoulder injury, guess what you do? You play.
Yes.
Right? And yes. this is LeBron saying, I see you, bro. Like, this is what I expect, and I see you doing it, right? And let's go, right? You know what I mean?
Passive aggressive way of saying you're going to keep doing this.
No, I don't. I think this is his nod and appreciation to we see you, bro. Like you're here to win a championship. The narrative may have been something else regarding your pain tolerance level, but right now I see what you're doing and I appreciate that because that's what we need you to do for this team. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think there are certain guys that are going to try to prove that they're not load management guys and be out there and be like, hey, I'm not taking nights off? Like, I think a Russell Westbrook would be a guy like that.
Maybe.
Say, you know what? I'm going to go out there and play.
To each his own.
Yeah.
I do. And I will double down on this. I don't care what Michael Jordan or anybody says. If you're paying ultimately, as an owner, right? Like, what's the number one goal of a franchise, Danny?
Win championships.
Win championships. So you've invested, I don't know, $35 million a year in said player because you believe as the best player, he represents an opportunity to lead, for him to lead your team to a championship.
Right.
If giving him 5 to 6 nights off a year, statistically has proven to help lessen the chance of injury that would derail that opportunity to win a championship, it only makes sense.
Let me ask you something, because it was Mark Cuban, right? That's who came out and said he supports the load management.
Yeah, yeah, that's what Joey was saying.
Let me ask something.
Just recently he came out and said it.
But let me ask something. Do you think the Dallas Mavericks have a legitimate chance to win a title this season? Probably a little bit more of a long shot. Like they're right now, they're a 6 seed and they're 6-4. You know, if maybe they kept, but I don't think anybody's pegging them. So I don't know what advantage it does to his team.
In their building, they might think they're the type of team right now that's probably not sure that they can't win a championship.
Right, right. So they're probably optimistic saying, hey, here we go.
We're sitting at 6-4.
Right, so maybe that's a bad scenario. But if you're an owner of a team that's on the outside looking in and all of a sudden your stars are saying, hey, Kawhi's taking nights off. LeBron, you know, whoever else is taking nights off, I want nights off. Are you still going to say that if you're an owner?
No, look, I think the narrative around this is the wrong one. I don't think it's players going in saying, hey, I want the night off. Give me the night off. I think this is an organizational thing. And the last time we talked about it, I said owners, they're not the only ones though. This is organizational. This is your executives, your trainers, your medical staffs sitting down, like combing over data, looking at your injury history, Danny, figuring out what the sweet spot is for games played, minutes played per game, and then kind of figuring out what your season's going to look like with you. But it's not you just coming in saying, hey, man, I'm taking the night off. This is an organizational decision.
Yeah.
And so if you have an asset, if you've got a player on your team and you're not in a championship run, and he's worth $40 million. And the data says that if you run him over, you know, 35 minutes a night, the probability that he gets hurt, like, jumps exponentially. Guess what you probably shouldn't do?
Play him out there.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Right.
Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell on this Wednesday. We got Shoe Showdown in just a minute.
Yeah.
There was a rumor, some news reported that Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, wants to get into the NFL, wants to acquire a team. Interesting stat that came out on his net worth. He is worth $104 billion. I've seen some of those breakdowns of how much he makes per second. It's really depressing when you think about it.
It's startling.
It would make him the richest NFL owner by approximately $92 billion more than the next guy. He could basically write a check for any franchise that he wanted. Imagine if he went after the Cowboys and was like, Jerry, I want your squad. Like, imagine the bidding war that would get. I don't think Jerry would give it up. I think he likes
Jerry
it
would
much.
No.
I think he like, even if he said $25
billion, nope.
Jerry would be like, no, I'm hanging on to him because he likes being out in front of the camera. So something to keep an eye out on that story as it keeps developing. I think if he wants it to happen, he's going to be in. It's just a matter of time. All right, for our Shoe Showdown, our buddy Ruben comes out with his Sneaker King Power Rankings every Friday. This is volume 3. Let's break it down. You can go to CBSSports.com to check out his rankings every single week. Coming in at number 5, Langston Galloway. This is the NBA's custom Sneaker King because these are customs.
Okay.
He wears the Chinese Q4 brand. These are some Q4 Veterans Day customs, kind of like those, and then some Sonic the Hedgehog. I think our kids would like those. Is he still popular? He must be popular in China.
There's a movie coming out.
Is it not out yet? Okay, so there you go. Getting some
It's a great game, by the way. Those are the Veterans Day.
I like the Veterans Day ones. Those are pretty sweet. All right, how about Jason Tatum? The Jordan 34s I'm starting to like a little bit, except I don't know if I like the colorway on these. Very busy on these childhood movies.
Yeah, I kind of dig those.
You like the colors on those?
Kemba was wearing them, too. I like those.
I like the 34s in general. And then he had these, the ones that I like.
Yeah, those are hot.
The JTs right there. All right. How about Jeff Green rocking the Jordan 10 camos? If I'm going to go camo, I like traditional camo. One of two ways. I like the traditional, like, green, black, and orange, like round. I do like the snow camo, too. I don't know if I like that version of it.
Yeah.
And then I think you like these Jordan 10 Seattle.
The Seattles, I like those, those are the most comfortable Jordan to play in.
See, I don't like that camo. I'm not a huge fan of that camo.
They're like canvas,
What are you trying to have?
Texture.
Yeah, okay, there. That's unique there. All right, how about Alonzo Trier, who comes out with a the Kobe 5 Miles Davis.
Yes, sir.
Those are pretty fresh. I like those little patent leather, the bright blue.
Those are the best Kobe for me to rock with jeans.
Yeah. Oh, see, now these, I could see this colorway going with some jeans.
Yeah.
Those are the Supreme Chaos right there.
Those are hot.
And the Kobe 6, which I kind of like.
Those are
the Kobe 5s. I like the Kobe 6 a little bit better, I think, in those. And then how about number 1? No surprise. One of the sneaker kings in the NBA, PJ Tucker, who came out featuring Jordan 21 red suede. Those are ugly.
No, sir.
Those kind of look like the Adidas ugly. I think Adidas has a basketball shoe they call like the ugly. Like, those look ugly as sin. And then the Nike LeBron 8s. Because you don't see like that many LeBron throwbacks nowadays, but he is getting older, so those are starting to show themselves there as well. All right, how about for releases this weekend? The Jordan 1 Fearless Melody Asani.
Yeah, those are hot.
I do like those. What does it say? Like, I kind of like some of the writing on the bottom. I'm trying to see what it says, though, and I'm struggling with it. But I kind of like those. If you want it was rare. I don't know what it says. But I kind of like them. And they're going with two shoes, different philosophies there. Do you get the watches on the top?
You get the watches on the top. You better get the watches on the top.
Well, they're only $130. Those watches might not be that expensive.
And it's plastic.
Somebody's going to swap them out with some rollies, though. somebody's going to swap them out with some bling on them. Those come out this weekend. How about the Nike LeBron 17 red carpets?
I like the red carpets, too. I like this LeBron. I don't know. I think it's the sneaker toe box. Like, it looks more like a running shoe. I've never liked that pod on the outer sole on the forefoot.
Yep.
But I do like how sleek the front toe box is.
All right. How about my guy, Travis Scott, with the new Cactus Jack and Air Force Ones?
I'm out.
Yeah, I don't know if I love them.
They look like umpire shoes.
Yes, they do. With some padding to protect the top of your shoe.
Zippers, you're doing too much.
I still might have to do it just on the replay.
Speaking of which, real quick. All right,
what you got? I went with the slingshots, and I know you have these. Hopefully, you didn't wear these today. Just simple, kind of old school. These were the J. Crew special. What do you got?
Yeah, I went with the Kobe Pro Tour.
Oh, so that's why you were pumping up those. Yeah, I'm going to guess that Ruben's going to give you the nod. Black, this is kind of, I nailed it in this morning.
Yeah.
I had these, but I
shouldn't have wasted my Pro Tour.
I've been told runaway winner is Rodman.
See that? Now I got to bring some heat next week. I'm going to have to go to
Has anybody, have you seen the new Kanye, like, sandal type of things?
Oh, they're pretty fresh.
Oh, they are pretty trash.
Oh, they are. So, yes. All right, we'll have to bring those up next week on the Showdown. All right, see you, man. Have a good weekend.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.